Lyndon Burns is somebody we often turn to chat about these matters, owner and MD of Plain Talking and a partner at BHT Crisis Communications. Hello, Lyndon.
Hi, John. Good afternoon. Good afternoon to everyone on the call. I mean, on the listening in
on the call, yes. This is not a Zoom one, Lyndon. It's not Microsoft Teams or Zoom. It's just John and Lyndon and people listening.
Freudian slip from the airline industry.
Do those a lot. Are the airlines and the airport companies over-exaggerating their plight, or is it as serious as they claim?
No, it is very serious. And let's put that into some context. The industry worldwide has a lot of fixed costs that they've tried to compress as much as they can. But they're burning through cash at the moment at a rate of about 5 million rand a minute.
That's
industry wide. Okay, $300,000 a minute, or five million rand, roughly. And you know, if we look at the impact here in South Africa, I know you've quoted there the numbers that were given globally for the global impact, but just here in South Africa, you know, there are about 270,000 jobs on the line in aviation and the tourism sector. That's roughly half of the 400. Well, it's more than half of the 470,000 people who were deemed to have been employed or whose jobs relied on those sectors by the end of 2018. And that's according to an Oxford Economics study that was done. And what IATA, which represents the airlines and the Airports Council, are calling for is saying, look, you know, governments, if you're really serious about having any kind of meaningful economic recovery, then you've got to safeguard your air transport ecosystem. It doesn't help to throw all the eggs into one basket and just focus on, as we are in South Africa, one airline. You need to be, providing support in various ways to all the airlines, regardless of ownership, as well as the airports and all the other service providers, the weather service, the civil aviation authority, all the commercial service and suppliers, because they're all being hit. The infrastructure service providers are getting whacked because they're not getting the revenue anymore because there aren't enough people traveling and there aren't enough flights taking off and landing. So organizations like the Civil Aviation Authority, which was responsible for safety and safety oversight, they've got a massive revenue hole because they typically charge 24 rand on every air ticket sold in the country. Now, we're going to have 16.5 million fewer passenger journeys undertaken in the South African market this year compared with last year. Multiply that by 24 rand, and you start seeing the size of the hole. AXA here in Cape Town have had to now shelve the plan to build the new runway and other expansion and CapEx projects that they've had. In fact, their total $6.5 billion infrastructure development program, which would have been great for the economy, given what the president is saying about needs for infrastructure programs. Well, that's had to be parked because they don't have the revenue and the cash flow to support it at the moment. So that's been kicked down the road for another 5 years. And so on. It's cascading through the industry. And you can imagine then the ripple effects as that impacts on other sectors like the civil engineering and construction sector.
But this is the cry from every industry, almost every industry. Some have done well out of COVID, let's not forget that. But the vast majority of industry business sectors have suffered. And does the airline industry have any greater claim to increasingly scarce bailout funds than any other part of a country's economic makeup?
And I think the answer to that is, the airlines and the airports are saying, look, we recognize the competing demands on government spending around the world, and especially in countries like South Africa. And that's why they're saying, look, there are other levers you can pull to provide the relief that we need. You can do waivers on some of the charges. You can do tax deferrals. You can issue guarantees so that those entities can go and raise loans themselves and sort out their own finances. So there are a number of interventions that governments could be making to help. In addition, the IMF, the Africa Development Bank, and several other big institutional lenders and financial organizations have committed over $30 billion of relief aid to Africa's airlines and tourism sector. But only a fraction of that money is actually flowing to the recipients because governments are, have got a chokehold over a lot of it. So they could be doing things like that, letting that money flow, letting that relief reach where it needs to go. And all of this could be done without having to burden the taxpayers.
And then the other part of this, current quarantine arrangements to be replaced with a new testing regime. We don't have a quarantine arrangement here in South Africa. If you arrive with a negative PCR test, which was done 72 hours before, then you're allowed in. Although I have an acquaintance who's in the UK at the moment and wants to come back on Friday, had her PCR test on Monday, and doesn't look as if she's going to get the result back in time to catch her flight on Friday, because Britain, you know, Britain's supposed to be efficient, but their testing system is wankered. But I mean, it's that balance between economic health and
the difficulty we've got in South Africa, John, is that we've got these other arbitrary measures with this classification of countries into these three different risk lists. And this list is meant to, or these lists are meant to be reviewed on a fortnightly basis. So you can't really plan a trip. If you were, sitting in Germany today and you wanted to book a ticket, you can go and book a ticket, fine. But you might wake up by the end of the week to discover that Germany is now on the high risk list.
Well, it will be, because it's currently at around, for the last 5 days, around 4,500 positive tests a day, which is well above South Africa's, therefore registered, therefore Germans can't come to South Africa.
But what the industry is saying is, look, COVID is no less dangerous if it comes from someone in a low-risk country or a high-risk country. So do the testing before departure, before anyone gets near an airplane, and then do additional screening as they get through an airport before they get on a plane, so you can stop anyone who is infected or showing the symptoms from traveling. That way you then don't need to have risk lists and quarantine measures and other arbitrary stuff, because what they really want to do is avoid the mistakes that were made after 9/11 with security, where everybody invented their own set of standards for security. So even today, you go to an airport, and one airport will tell you, take your shoes off. Another one will ask you to take your belt off. Another one will tell you, we want to see your laptop powered up, etc. There needs to be one standardized, harmonious set of standards for biosecurity if this is going to work. And if governments are really serious about balancing the economic interests against the public health interests, I think it's safe to say, and nobody is pretending that there's some sort of silver bullet that's going to suddenly solve everything. So we have to find workable solutions to exist in the COVID environment, just as we have with HIV.
And what are the chances of that happening? What are the chances of that unified, international, global biosecurity standard being applied? Less than zero was my confident prediction.
No, I don't think so. The UN has two sister bodies, the World Health Organization and the International Civil Aviation Organization, and they've got a joint task group working on biosecurity measures for the safe resumption of travel and tourism, and ironically chaired by a South African medical expert, Dr. Ansa Jordan, who's the International Civil Aviation Organization's chief medical officer and advisor. And they've got representatives from some of the leading communicable disease institutes and other public health authorities. And they're working on these things, but we need them to actually accelerate their actions, and those organizations at the UN then need to get policy passed so that all of the UN signatory nations adopt those as a treaty, and then they can be applied. So it shouldn't be a difficult thing to do.
Okay. Well, shouldn't be doesn't always translate into it's being done. But thank you, Lyndon Burns, owner, MD of a consultancy called Plain Talking, and also a partner at BHK Crisis Communications.